Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? End of the line, Joel says, Keith Woods was kicking ass on Twitter stream this evening. All right, well, glad to hear. I know that he's been generating some very talked about clips in the last few Twitter spaces. I don't know about tonight, but it's great to hear. Based Saxon says, does anyone use the Odyssey mobile app? The show is not appearing on the app for me. Had to switch to desktop. Yeah, I don't know that the app is fully worked out. You know, I think it's an app that they tried to do their best, but it's, I think you're better on desktop. Anyways, you know, if you have to watch me on your cell phone, not sure I'm interested at continuing our relationship. String Mamel has been updating me about his attempts at finding woman. He switched from bar hose to college students. He's hanging out at some university and cold approaching all the women he sees. I told him, you can do this, but you're going to have to tolerate a high rejection rate because there's lots of women who are in the university. They already have a boyfriend or they see themselves as some kind of professionals in the making, and they're not interested in love at all. But he took the, he said, okay, I'm ready to receive 100 refusals today. And he hanged out on the streets of the college and approached all women he could find. He had 50 rejections, but he then had a series of women, a couple of them accepting to give him his phone number, and even one of them apparently find him cute, and it was kind of already getting in the hugging stages. So they are different women from the bar hose, the university woman. Some of them are very busy. Some of them have too many courses. And they will take the guy who pops in their life and they'll be happy that, oh my, oh, at least this is done. You know, they're very checklist oriented. So the bar ho, she spends her entire days 24/7 that she has energy to invest to just be a ho. And that causes problems because it's very demanding. Whereas the university woman, she's very busy on other things that take her energy, and she wants to get resolved with the romantic stuff as quick as possible. So you have to deal a different strategy, but it's totally doable. And, you know, yeah, there are women who are coming out from programs of university where they will be making a good salary. So they're not worried so much about having a provider. They want someone who's efficient in their lives. So that's what you have to be, Shring Mamel. Anon says, I just want a nice 2000 girl. 2000s girl. Year 2000. Yes. The year 2K bug didn't happen in the computers as we expected. It happened in the girls. And yes, Anon, I would like to have this too. Dino Lugovich says, Shrigma went from sad to Chad at warp speed. Be careful with the JF program. As far as I know, he's the only person in the world who has truly implemented the JF program by the book. You know, in terms of really industrially just spamming cold approaches. That is very demanding. It's very demanding on the brain, you know, especially if you're like me, like an intellectual guy who really doesn't care about romanticism and that kind of stuff. It's super demanding. I would want to have a stable girlfriend, but it's like you have to approach all of these girls. They have to reject you eventually. Some of them, they make you lose 1 week, 2 weeks of your life, and then they reject you. It's what the numbers are. It's what you have to do, unfortunately. Go Away says, if you're like me, poor, uneducated, but very attractive and charismatic, look for a rich girl in university doing a STEM subject. These girls are the best to date. Yes, they can be good. They can be very good. They can be very clean girls, intelligent girls. And they can be really in that mood of, I don't need a provider. I just want a guy. And I'm gonna grab any guy who shows himself to be practical, who fits well with my career trajectory. So that's totally possible. Frederick von Finkel says, there is a rare kind of woman who is genetically superior and dedicates her life to making as many babies as possible. They often put their kids up for adoption. They have perfect hips and find pregnancy easy. There is no point finding any other woman than these women. Well, that is an extreme positioning. I think that you have no interest as a man on the dating scene to be excluding anyone. So you can't afford to be selective in the current market. So you're going to have to deal with what comes toward you. Gigi says, can someone still be considered uneducated after watching 1,000 episodes of JFG tonight? Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe you should get a diploma. Mexican billionaire says he only holds Bitcoin, MicroStrategy, Bitcoin miners, old oil companies, and gold miners in his portfolio. This guy understands what matters, and we are seeing a price rise today on Bitcoin that is encouraging because Bitcoin has been slowly going down. Hopefully that price rise will keep going, and these normies are going to kill me. I helped a guy 4 months ago, approximately, buy Bitcoin. And he's already sending me messages. Jeff, is it the right time to sell? I think I need money. And I told him 4 months ago, only put in Bitcoin what you're ready to hold until the end of 2024, beginning of 2025. If there's any doubt that you will have to withdraw this money, do not put it in. And he's like, oh yeah, I want out. And it's like, well, yeah, you can go out, but you're going to lose 10% of your money. And it's like, you've done all of this for nothing. We told you you had to huddle. We didn't tell you it was going to be easy, but you have to huddle. That is the challenge of Bitcoin. You're not going to get the best from it if you treat it like a savings account. Little dogs here chanting and playing music. Chepesut says, is there a reason you don't work in academia? There's a dozen reasons. First, I've made much more money outside of academia. In academia, you only get to make what you need to live in that university town, pay the expenses to sustain yourself, if you're lucky. In the private sector, I've been making so much money, just contracts, books, this show here, YouTube, all of this brought me so much more money than I could have never saved. You cannot save when you're working in a university and they put you in these little jobs that give you 40, 50, 60,000. And everyone looks at the professor who's making $100,000. But they don't consider, hey, you're going to pay huge taxes on this. It's not like a business where you have tax advantages. And it's not like Bitcoin where you have the capital gains tax advantages. So in the end, the person who's employed at 100,000 at the university, first, they had to work 20, 30 years before they got there. And secondly, they are being taxed like shit on this. And on top of it, it's money that's easily seizable for exes and in a divorce. So it's not your money. It's really governmental money that they're shuffling among themselves and perhaps your exes. So no, there's no question that I would continue in that fork that I had a choice to do. It was very quick that I've been making more money outside of academia while reaching the tops in academia. I've had the top awards that you can get. I've had the top doctorate awards that you can possibly get. I had the top postdoctoral award that brought me to Duke University. And yet, all you do with this money is just survive. You cannot stack, you cannot buy property. And the university system is so unstable that you can't stay in place. You have to beg, always beg to some other town to hire you. 3 years later, 4 years later, you know, you don't get to stay in place very much. So all in all, this is just one of the reasons. Also, I was not considering that I was engaged in a solid pursuit of truth. You have the problem that the academia is totally bureaucratized and it becomes I want to ask permissions to do this experiment. And it has to be approved, and you need to get a grant, and you need to write a grant proposal. This system for the search for truth is too painful. Whereas, as a theoretician, I consider that I can do much better outside of academia. I've released The Revolutionary Phenotype outside of academia. It is still, to me, the best expression of a theory of evolution ever. So I've made better contributions than I could have inside at the academia. I've made better contribution outside. And just the general pain of being in bureaucratic network and trying to get governments to fund your lifestyle, that doesn't fit my personality at all. I don't want to see, you know, some department head having to do an interview, having to sell myself, having to go to conferences, having to see these fucking scientists that you need to please, and the peer review process totally corrupt. So just too much corruption. I couldn't continue in a field where your talent at corruption actually is what's needed to rise, and your talent as a scientist is secondary. On top of it, there is this whole combination between the researcher role and the teacher role, where, you know, teaching is something I like, but I like teaching in practical settings. I don't like the idea of you're just given a class and you need to go through a textbook, and, you know, I don't like passive teaching. I love teaching in the act. I love teaching in the lab. I love teaching to specific people. I love growing alongside other people and learning alongside them. But the per act of teaching to a bunch of retards, I don't like it. And the university is progressively becoming this kind of clientelism type of teaching, where they will rate you bad teacher because they don't like what you have to say. So there's this problem also, which is, I don't know if I want a class of 400 people to whom I have to explain that, yes, evolution is true, races are true, and it's who cares about your leftist belief? There's no support for it. That is not the kind of teaching that excites me. I am a natural teacher that teaches in the action, and that teaches, and you might tell me, well, Jeff, aren't there lab courses that you could have taught? Even lab courses, it's still a bunch of retards who don't want to hear what you have to say. So basically, I'm unfit for the modern university. It's a bunch of Marxists who are not there to learn. They're there to argue, and they're there to combat their imperialistic imposition of their modern view of the world onto their teachers. That is not the kind of teaching I can do. I'm just too stubborn and too traditionalist. Teaching has to be imposed. Teaching is like raping the brain of someone else, in my view. And you have to let me do it, as Donald Trump once said. Shrek Mamel sends a super chat. He says, "Jeff, I have found some quality girls after approaching about 80 at the university campus. I'm glad it's that season again. The bar scene was getting old." Yeah, I actually talked about your ventures at the beginning of the show. I'm super happy that you found a new niche, because yes, it can get tiring, and yes, everything you've learned in the bar scene will be useful. If not for the way to treat exactly these women, certainly for having given you confidence, and what you practiced in terms of cold approach at the bar will all apply, just in a different setting, at the university. So after the show, make sure you rewind to the beginning and see what my tips were. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, "Hey, Jeff, my center-right friend, who apparently needs based blacks to speak for him, keeps sending me videos of black conservative perspective, and he says he's ultra-conservative, yet he won't tune in to your show. How conservative is this guy?" Oh, well, I have no idea who that is.
You pledged during...
Eric Adam... Okay, so that is a video of this guy about Eric Adams.
In my life, have I had a problem that I did not see an ending to? I don't see an ending to this. I don't see an ending to this.
An ending?
This issue will destroy New York City. Destroy New York City.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. We got to talk about a lot of the hate, bigotry, and xenophobia coming from the left in their own arguments, not mine's, right? This is their own argument. Because Eric Adams is going viral for...
The left are the real racists. See, that is something that a hyper-conservative would never even think about saying. Because if you're into the lefts are the real racist type of discourse, even if you do it in jest, even if you do it like this guy says, I'm just adopting their perspective, it's like, well, there you go, you just said it. You are thinking of the world in terms of a leftist framing. So no, that is definitely not a hyper-conservative.
For a speech that sounds like it would come out the mouth of the governor of a red border state. Like, for example, maybe Greg Abbott would say something like this. Maybe you might.
This is a naturally leftist mind trying to make arguments for the right, because that's his job, basically. This guy is a conservative in the same way that the guy who gathers my trash is a born trash collector. You know, he's not really that. He's just doing this as employment.
I hear DeSantis say something like this, but this guy is basically ringing the alarm on how bad the illegal immigration crisis has gotten in New York, and how illegals are going to flood all neighborhoods, and how bad this is, right? Again, this is this stuff that they told us was bigotry, right? People on the right, you know, that were complaining about this, that were saying all this.
Okay, well, it's like it would take me hours to determine what this guy thinks and whether it's interesting, and I won't spend this time. I just don't care. But yeah, there is this trend of certain people are not willing to hear things from white people, because ultimately they have fundamentally bought the left's bluff on this. They have bought the left's anti-whiteness, and perhaps thinkers like this guy are the tool, the pragmatic thing that we need to bring these people back into right-wing thinking. But I think generally it's going to be less. I think we're going to lose more than we win by doing this, because ultimately we're deceiving people into thinking that their set of belief is enough to be right-wing, when in fact it's probably not. If you need a black conservative guy to convince you of conservative ideas, you're probably not a conservative to begin with. Zionist pundit Ben Shapiro admits he is only loyal to America because Israel exists. He then calls the Jewish state a backstop in case anything should go wrong in the U.S. Oh, so we get to have some insight into how Ben Shapiro sees his position in the U.S. And this reinforces what I've been talking about. I think the Jews are preparing an exit of the U.S. I mean, tell me I'm wrong after hearing this from Ben Shapiro.
Ever wonder if one day you'll have to flee the United States?
I mean, I think that every Jew throughout world history who has a brain and knows history has always wondered if a country that is not a Jewish state is going to eternally provide them security guarantees and full citizenship, of course. I mean, that's why the existence of the State of Israel is the single greatest guarantor of my loyalty to the United States, frankly. Right? Because Israel exists, that means the United States is going to be a more welcoming place for me.
So Israel existing is the guarantor of your loyalty to the U.S. In other words, your loyalty to the U.S. is just a loyalty by proxy. It really is a loyalty that you mean to be for Israel, but given that the U.S. delivers still enough favors for Israel, you are fine channeling some of that kind of accidental loyalty to the U.S. I mean, listen again. This is fascinating. You get the whole psychology right here.
Of course. I mean, that's why the existence of the State of Israel is the single greatest guarantor of...
The existence of the State of Israel is a guarantor
of my loyalty to the United States.
Of my loyalty to the United States. Was this in the Constitution? Does someone have an old version of the U.S. Constitution? Does it mention that you have to be loyal to Israel, which gives you a guarantee, which guarantees that you will also be loyal to the U.S.? Is it in the oath that people give to the U.S. Constitution? And Ben Shapiro knows that revealing this is kind of is going to lead to lots of questions. And so he adds, frankly.
States, frankly. Right?
Frankly. So when you say frankly, it's because you've just said something that, yeah, it may shock you, but that's how I think. So Ben Shapiro sees his loyalty to the U.S. as an accidental loyalty of the circumstances of history. And really, his loyalty is to Israel.
Right, because Israel exists, that means the United States is going to be a more welcoming place for me, because Israel is there as a backstop in case anything should go wrong.
Why?
That is a weird interpretation. I believe it doesn't properly capture the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. It's not that Israel being there leads the U.S. to be incentivized at giving you a place in the country. What's happening is that your presence in the U.S. is draining the energy of the U.S. to deliver services to the nation that you're truly loyal to by your own admission, which is Israel. That is the summary of the relationship between Israel and the U.S. It's not Israel is there, therefore the U.S. is good for you. It's Israel is there, therefore you are willing to continue draining the military and geopolitical advantage of the U.S. to the advantage of Israel as long as it's useful to you.
Why won't you make Aliyah to the state of Israel?
What does it even say? I don't fully understand.
Because
ever wonder if
okay, well that's all we have in this clip. Very interesting and very honest. Aliyah. So maybe that's some Jewish term of some kind. I don't know what it is. I interacted with a guy on Twitter, and it was just at the request of people because the guy was kind of loosely attacking race realism. But I hate these kind of guy who are trying to ride the fence, and they're trying to write in a way that will lead their anti-race viewers to believe that perhaps they are anti-race realist. But at the same time, they can argue, well, at no point in this Twitter thread did I say that races don't exist. But it's like, if you started your tweet, History Speaks, by talking about the race realist and, you know, the HBD advocate and the race realist. And when you say the race realist and you conjugate their sentence in the third person, they, and then you go on to undermine the argument that you think they're making. You're like, they say this, but that's ridiculous. They say that, but that's ridiculous. I'm going to assume when you speak at the third person that you don't include yourself in the race realist. And therefore, because if you had included yourself in the race realist position, you wouldn't have said they. You wouldn't have conjugated in the third person. You would say, us, race realist, we believe this. So it's like, he claims that I've been strawmanning him, but going back to his tweet, I didn't. His original tweet was, I've been reading per Nathan Kofna's request and that of other race realists, some literature on race and intelligence. Race realists want me to hand wave away. So here you go, the third person conjugation of race realist. So from the moment I see these words, I don't care what you say after, because what he says after doesn't matter. You have excluded yourself from the race realist, and therefore you are saying to me in this sentence, you're not a race realist. You don't include yourself in the conjugation at the third person, and therefore you exclude yourself, therefore you're not a race realist. Now, that's what I concluded from this thing. So then I commented on trying to convince him of race realism. I said, communism or severe food deprivation can make white people lower IQ in specific historical context, therefore races don't exist. It's a simple bit, because his argument is, well, here's this moment in history where white people aren't high IQ. And it's like, yeah, I could engage on whether the measures are even true. But I want to leave that on the side. And even taking what he says at face value, that's not a satisfying argument. There may very well be conditions in the past where the measures of IQ could have varied. None of this would challenge race realism in any form. And, you know, I hate it when they write stuff like the race realists, they say that. They ask me to believe this. They ask me to believe that. If you have a specific quote from a given thinker, quote it rather than quote the entire ideology. Because I'm a race realist in the sense that I believe races exist. But I don't have a particular position on Great Britain's IQ in 1900. I don't know. We'd have to check. We'd have to get into the dirty details and probably find out that we don't have a good measure of the British IQ in the 1900, you know? But I don't particularly care, yet I adhere to race realism. Race realism is actually independent of any questions of IQ, and it's a matter of whether races exist. So I brought back the matter to the terms that you've been using in your tweet. That is not me strawmanning you. It's me highlighting a position that you are implicitly adopting by using the third person to talk about race realist. So he criticizes me and he says, I unironically was hoping when he was tagged on my thread that JF, given that he is one of the relatively few online HBD advocates with a background in the sciences, would provide a serious hereditarian argument. Instead, we get this nonsense. One, implying that average British and American citizens in the 1900 suffered from severe food deprivation. Everyone suffered, but by the standard of today, everyone back then suffered from severe food deprivation. I mean, of course, everything is relative. You might think that was more close to our natural state, but the transportation of goods and the varieties of goods that were available to someone back then was much more restricted than today. Much more restricted. I was just looking at all of the elements on a bottle of formula for babies. It's crazy. It's crazy the amount of things they have to gather to make a complete nutrition for a baby. We didn't have these capacities in the 1900s. And so, yes, I don't think it's abusive to think of people pretty much before 1960 as having definitely a different nutrition, and one that that can be characterized as severely deprived in comparison to the diversity of what's available today. Now, of course, you'll have the hippies and the sticks, Exenhammer coming to me and say, well, Jeff, it was better that way. I'm not arguing about whether it was better or not. I would kind of agree with Sticks there, that basically the human genome is designed to thrive in severe deprivation. But leave aside the moral question. Yes, I'm an anarcho-primitivist. Yes, I would like to return to these times where people have to fight for a berry. But we're not there. And in comparison to today, yes, it was a very minimal and limited nutrition. And on average, although maybe you had some people in the high classes of society who could afford diversity of nutrients, that was certainly not the standard for the common man. So I stand by my characterization, but my characterization is not even necessary to my argument. My argument is you're a race realist. So second, a straw man argument, I don't deny that races exist. Well, as I said in my answer, if you don't deny that races exist, you are a race realist, and you should stop referring to them in the third person. Welcome to the club. Oh, and by the way, the first rule of the race realist club, you never write a thread in which you debunk race realism when you're a race realist. So start acting like you're in the club, History Speaks. I order you as a member of the Race Realist Club. Joel Surrett says, yo, JF, Finkelstein telling the truth, man. He posted proof in the chat. okay, but what? Truth about what? I have to scroll. Okay, there he is. He sent a super chat. Frederick von Finkel says, I uploaded my DNA for future generations to use me as a sterile worker. I also wrote to Facebook to let them digitally and physically clone me. You also have my permission, JF. Holy shit. This guy isn't playing around. What the fuck? this guy may have made the most genius reproductive act ever. Like, you're gonna do like Schwingma Mail and solicit sex to woman? This guy doesn't give a shit. He went straight to GitHub. He went straight to GitHub and published his DNA. I mentioned maybe doing this with the blockchain, maybe inserting my genes onto the blockchain. Wow. Isn't that fascinating? DNA. So, of course, the account being called DNA, you know what it's about. And then ancestrydna.txt. Bold move by Mr. Von Finkel, I must say, laughing my ass off. 17.5 megabytes. In a text file, raw ancestrydna.txt. Wow. Frederick Von Finkel says you can open it. Well, I hope that... I just thought about a biologist joke. I hope there aren't too many viruses in there. God. Oh, that is funny. The viruses. There's actually 17% viruses in there. That's why it's funny. Wow. He even wrote something in there. The people who are unamused, please understand. There are more than 15% virus DNA in any human DNA. And so he tells me, Jeff, download my file. And I'm like, I hope there aren't viruses in this file. And I'm talking about computer viruses. But the reality is there are viruses. There are real viruses on there. That is the joke. Oh, my God. I guess you need to be educated to find this joke funny. All right, so what does he say? This file was generated by Ancestry DNA. Okay, it's not a message from him. It's a message from Ancestry DNA. Genetic data is provided below as 5-tab delimited columns. Each line corresponds to a SNP. Column 1 provides the SNP identifier. RSID where possible. Columns 2 and 3 contain the chromosome and base pair position of the SNP using human reference build 37.1 coordinates. Columns 4 and 5 contain the two alleles observed at this SNP. The genotype is reported on the forward plus. And there you go. You have the full genotype of the guy. Frederick Von Finkel, what a bold move. Congratulations. Makes me jealous. I need to outdo Frederick Von Finkel. I need to find a way for posterity to be able to recreate a full JF. And I know that you've only published your SNPs, so that only can be interpreted by a future scientist who already has the human genome as a record. I think I can outsperm you, Frederick Von Finkel, because I think I can publish the true sequence of DNA that is needed for such a future scientist that would be so far in the future that they would have no idea what the regular human genome was, and perhaps their human genome might have changed by then. And so I'm going to consider, I mean, I don't know how much it would cost in a Bitcoin ordinal, but 3 billion letters is a lot of data. 6 billion letters, maybe, with the diploid. organism. 6 billion letters, and I wrote a little letter, you know, my letter letter about the future humans on the blockchain, and it cost me like $70 or something like this. I'm afraid that putting my whole genome on the Bitcoin blockchain might be very costly, maybe in the many tens of thousands of dollars. I don't know. I'd have to check. But what a bold move. Brilliant move. Elon Musk has turned off Starlink to stop Ukrainian attack on Russia. Elon Musk covertly instructed his team of engineers to deactivate his company's Starlink satellite communications network along the Crimean coastline during a Ukrainian offensive. This covert action was taken to thwart a potential surprise Ukrainian assault on the Russian naval fleet, as revealed in Walter Isaacson's biography. When Ukrainian submarine drones armed with explosives advanced toward the Russian fleet, they mysteriously lost connectivity. Now we know Musk deactivated Starlink. Musk's decision, despite Ukrainian officials pleading for the reactivation of the satellites, stemmed from his concern that a Ukrainian strike on Crimea might trigger a nuclear response from Russia. I don't know if that's a real belief of Elon. I think it's a little exaggerated. You know, we're talking about a very limited conflict in which even if Ukraine attacks bridges, we've not seen much response from Russia, certainly not in the nuclear domain, which is one thing I differ from Vladimir Putin. I differ with Vladimir Putin on this particular point. Personally, I would use the nuclear bomb on a regular basis as a leader of a nation, but that's just my way of managing. It's just like at some point I can't take it anymore. It's like, this fucking Zelensky keeps sending me drones. Yeah, I can block his drone, but it hurts me to know that there's someone out there who hates me enough to send me drones to just like passively aggressively bombard my empire. I think he would be better off not living, you know? I think it would be better off if we just carpet bombed with nuclear devices the whole of the country who's attacking me. That's how I would approach it. But of course, Vladimir Putin is the naked man on a horse. You know, he just thinks differently. Richard Spencer also thinks differently. He says, seizure and nationalization of Starlink seems a bare minimum at this point. What are you talking about? The Starlink satellites have been provided for free. It's not like Elon was on contract providing that for the US. They were provided for free because Elon wanted to make it, to bring some attention toward himself, I guess. But he can withdraw them whenever he wants. And I think it would be absolutely unfair for the US to take over possession of what a billionaire has developed for himself. Leave it to Elon. Elon can do whatever he wants with Starlink. And in fact, we have insight on this moment where Elon has decided to shut down the service. And apparently he said to one of his employees, "How am I in this war?" And that's interesting because back then, I was talking about it on my show and I was telling Elon, don't do it, Elon. Don't get into the whole militaristic empire of the US. It's not you. You're not going to like it. And it's a dirty job. And you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to live with the fact that there's human suffering on your shoulder that you caused. And I'm so happy that basically Elon not only listened to me on social media, I don't know if it's indirectly or if he watches the show, but he totally followed everything I said, everything I've dreamed of for years about Twitter. He did it. And then he did it also when I was frustrated that he was joining the side of Ukraine, because it would be very sad to have this freedom-oriented billionaire, a leader of America, and now a leader of free speech. To have him part of the war machine of the US would have been devastating, because the war machine eventually gets to you. Eventually, you end up lying for it, you end up making false arguments for it, and you end up deceiving people into a war. There's no choice. If you join the U.S. war machine, you're going to have to lie at some point. You're going to have to give up the truth, because every American war, basically for the last many, many decades, if not centuries, is based on a lie. So there's no way you can keep up that machine going without the lie, that the American people is so willing to believe. Ariel Suarez says, X is becoming less free and more pro-censorship now. Yeah, I think we've all felt that that maybe Elon has lost a little bit of power there, and maybe he's being taken over by bureaucrats who are reassuring him, yes, yes, Elon, we're still making your free speech stuff. But yeah, we've all felt that Twitter is at the intersection of a tug of war. And I just hope that Elon comes out strong from it. I think Elon has a very good understanding of how an organization can flee from your control. So I think that he's the best guy to have there to truly, you know, in the end, he's the one who put the money on the table so that we get free speech. And it would be theft of him if someone was to come inside and play against his will for Twitter. Ex-FTX executive, so a collaborator of SBF, to plead guilty to criminal charges, including donating $24 million of stolen customer funds to U.S. politicians. Ryan Salame. So that is a first step in perhaps getting SBF to be constrained to plead guilty or to have him lose his trial. But it's interesting that the weak parts of the chain are giving up, and here we have an FTX man who will be pleading guilty. Keith Woods has some words on Elon Musk. He says, it's hard to overstate the importance of Elon Musk's battle with the ADL. The rollout of free social media was the most revolutionary development in information dissemination since the printing press. When the regime realized just how revolutionary it was, they got to work spending years fighting for control through lobbying and financial manipulation. While much of this pressure is informal through networks and back channels, the ADL is the institutional public face of this political racketeering network. By 2020, their control of the major social media platforms was almost entirely secure by forcing Facebook to change their terms of service according to his liking. After a crushing advertiser boycott, Jonathan Greenblatt demonstrated that he had assumed the role of the final arbiter of speech on the internet. Last year, it looked like there was little hope for a way out of this situation until Elon Musk's surprise purchase of Twitter. The subsequent boycott headed by the ADL showed that even the richest men in the world can be scuppered by the malign influence of this group. It seemed the only way to reverse the financial damage done by Greenblatt and his co-conspirators would be to gradually return control to the ADL. But now, riding a wave of popular support from ex-users, Elon has decided to draw a line in the sand and fight back. The internet was the most revolutionary development of our age. In the fight to protect it from near-total control by insidious actors like the ADL may turn out to be one of the most important fights of the century. Let's all send Elon our prayers and hope he can be the first to deal a fatal blow to the ADL. Godspeed, Elon. My God, yes, Elon is on fire. Not Elon, Keith Woods, says DK Shadow. I agree, Keith Woods is on fire. Wow, beautiful text. And I agree. This will be remembered forever. It's a fight that happens so early in the internet when you think about it. And so quick. The internet veered from absolute freedom in 2013, 2014. There was no such thing as censorship. Anyone was doing whatever they wanted. And 2016, 2018, the censorship came in, and they have succeeded at taking most of the internet. They have put most of the internet under a giant umbrella of censorship, and we are already starting to liberate this part of the internet with Elon Musk's purchase of X, and hopefully the rest that didn't follow this trend of non-censorship, they will eventually pay the price by completely disappearing. Pentagon aborts flight test of first hypersonic missile at last minute, cause unknown. The U.S. military canceled a planned test launch of a new hypersonic missile system. It is unclear what happened to cause the Department of Defense to abort the test. This keeps happening again and again. There are promises of hypersonic missiles on the side of the U.S., but it seems like the development is being solidly hindered. I don't know if it's incompetence or if it's, I don't know, maybe the person responsible for the project was pregnant or on vacation. I don't know. But it keeps failing, this attempt of the U.S. at developing a reliable hypersonic missile system. I don't know. I think we may be reaching the Edward Dutton point of absolute incompetence, and we may be at a point where we're not able to develop. Sorry. Did I say pregnant woman? I meant pregnant person. Lendald Guntram. Sorry for this. Wow, that is impressive. Prepare your eyes, because this is weird. So it's an illusion of a 3D shape emerging merely from the movement of dots. Basically, as Steven Pinker summarized it, your brain prefers to see 3D objects when moving dots are moving in ways that would be expected for a 3D object. So just by moving them according to how you would expect a cube to be formed, your brain ends up seeing a cube where there is none. Quite fascinating. Very weird. Ashtepsut says, do you believe in the fractal theory of the universe? I don't know. Is that a thing? Is that named that way? Fractal theory of the universe. I never heard it under this term. I do like the idea of embedded universes and baby universes. I love it. In physical cosmology, fractal cosmology is a set of minority cosmological theories which state that the distribution of matter in the universe or the structure of the universe itself is a fractal across a wide range of scales. More generally, it relates to the usage or appearance of fractals in the study of the universe and matter. Oh, okay. So not a fractal of universes, but a fractal in terms of the distribution of matter. That is interesting. I've heard that theory before. I think it's... I don't have enough knowledge to judge it as valid or invalid. But yeah, the way the filaments are distributed in the universe, it's kind of shocking. And yeah. He says, I think that's why we see sacred geometry and fractal imagery when using psychedelics. Well, it has nothing to do with this. Let me tell you this. The question of whether gravity as expressed in our universe leads to fractals, that's one question. Your delusions in your head when you use psychedelics, that's a totally different question that has nothing to do with it. There's just no chance that there is a link between the filaments spreading in the universe at super high scale and what's happening in your brain. Your brain is merely affected by the gravity of planet Earth, and there's no reason why there would be a link. But yeah, I've seen this this view before, and I don't know if I agree or not agree, but I think it's charming. There are, you know, it doesn't take much for a fractal to happen. Basically, if you have the expression of laws, and these laws operate differently at different scales, I think you already have the... Once you reach a certain scale, you will have a dominance of a certain law. And then when you reach a higher scale, perhaps that law will not be dominant anymore, and perhaps some other law will be more dominant. No matter what it is, there are a lot of mechanisms by which you can generate fractals, and it's not super complicated. So the idea that it would have emerged as a structure in the universe, totally possible. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, did you cover the border situation at Saudi Arabia where they machine gunned at least hundreds of Ethiopian migrants and refugees? The same regime says what they say about European nations trying to maintain borders. I haven't followed in details, but I've seen some of the images on or the reports of this on social media. I don't know what to say. Yes, we've known that there is double standard in terms of talking about white nations and their openness to migrants and everyone else. Because Japan is not welcoming migrants like we do. No one is complaining against Japan for some reason. Lots of African countries are monoracial, basically. Both in the Arab countries and the black countries, they're basically monoracial, and no one is talking about a duty to diversify, you know. So, yes, we've known this for a long time, but that is how it is. It is the job of white people to understand their political interest at preserving their demographics. Don't wait for other nations to tell you that you deserve to exist. You need to claim your existence. Just put a stick in the ground, plant it as your flag, and say, that's our nation. There is no other way. You're not going to develop a sense of respect for white people through saying, oh, well, there's these other people there. They exist. Why do they exist while we don't exist? Well, you don't exist because they care about defending themselves and claiming their existence. As long as you can't get white people to do that, you're going to lose. You're going to disappear, in fact. Vivek Ramaswamy, anti-ESG ETF. Oops, sorry. Anti-ESG ETFs crosses $1 billion of valuation. I didn't know that this guy... Vivek Ramaswamy as a anti-ESG ETF. So basically, you bet on the market, just the most pollution, just the most polluting corporations possible. It's like, do you want to buy some oil company? Well, I have something for you. I have this other oil company. They expel much more CO2 in the atmosphere. How about you buy some stocks from them instead? That is interesting. Anti-ESG. Can you get into this ETF by making very evil actions? Like, could my show be in the Vivek Ramaswamy anti-ESG if I mess with governance or if I mess with the environment? Like if I was to take my car and start spinning the wheels and you see big smoke show coming out of my car, maybe eventually I could make it into the anti-ESG ETF. Trump calls on Big Pharma to disclose all vaccine side effect data. Yeah, it's a little late. It's a little late to be like, hey, we haven't seen the data. Well, if you haven't seen the data, why were you like a fucking clown appearing on every media bragging about the efficacy and safety of this vaccine? Like, normally you ask for the data before you say it's safe. But Trump, you can't be both a fan of the vaccine and, oh my God, we've developed it at lightning speed, and also an anti-vaccine proponent. That doesn't work. I think that's Trump trying to seek some support in the anti-vax crowd, because I think that some of his counselors have told him, look, we have to dissociate from the vaccine. But you look ridiculous now, Donald Trump. Even I, as a fan of you, you know, I think you were the best president in a long time, but you look ridiculous because you were the one pushing this vaccine. You were making a case that it was safe. You were proud of its development. You cannot be all these things. And 2 years later say, oh yeah, what about the data? Well, you sold this vaccine without the data, and that's the problem. A last news item, idealism collides with realism. Mayor Eric Adams says that the migrant crisis will destroy New York City. We should protect our migrants, our immigrants, period. Yes, New York City will remain a sanctuary city under an Adams administration. That was him in 2021. Now, I'm going to tell you something, New Yorkers. Never in my life have I had a problem that I didn't see an ending to. I don't see an ending to this. He doesn't see an ending to the immigrant problem. So you're, of course, you're a sanctuary city. It's not going to end. It's just going to continue. People are going to deliver migrants to your sanctuary. Cloud Warmer has said, Jeff, what is your opinion? What, in your opinion, attracts people to such things as New Age and meditation, navel gazing, and other things that are not part of mainstream religion? Usually they mix this up with things like quantum. Are these people subverted? Are they looking for meaning? Are they just idiots? I think there's all sorts of mechanism, but basically you have a basic behavioral drive for religious rituals in human civilization. Religious rituals probably are good because you show your self-control, you show your submission to God, and that gives an idea of the people of your village that, oh, here's someone who's submitted. Maybe she could be submitted to me. So I think it's an advertisement of cognitive submission, the belief in God and higher powers. Now, I think that eventually the signal for this. So you're an advertiser and you go to the church every Sunday to advertise your submission. And various religions have various tricks, but, you know, putting yourself on your knees, doing the five prayers for the Muslims, praying to God and talking about a God that is in the sky, and general demonstrations of submissiveness to that higher authority. You're an advertiser for your brain's capacity to do all this. But then there comes an exploiter of the signal. So do you really need religion to advertise the various things that are advertised in a religious ritual? Well, probably not. And so you end up having people of little faith evolving. They can adhere to whatever current set of beliefs. They can loosely adhere to it. They're not going to be religious zealots. They're going to be the contrary of religious zealots. They're going to be just loosely imprinted by whatever is the zeitgeist of the current moment. And so I think that New Age beliefs and all this witchery kind of crap, it all passes through this signal, basically. You had a signal that was legitimately there, that was putting you on your knees so that the potential mate would see that you're on your knees and you're submissive. But then the knees can easily transform themselves behaviorally into any sort of physical ritual. And they end up, like, instead of their knees, they end up with their legs crossed, praying to the sun god. That's just the looseness of evolution. I think there's not a particular evolutionary explanation you need to understand that evolution is messy. And if it tries to make you adhere to a religion because it's been good for you, it will miss at some point and it will leak. Cloud Warmer says, JF, if we convinced Elon to send Shrigmamel and go away to Mars with 11 human females with the instruction to populate Mars, who would you bet on as being the most successful hope for humanity on another planet? I'm totally betting on Shrigmamel, because Go Away has given me no evidence. By trolling this chat for so many years, he has still not given me any evidence that he's willing to truly invest effort into a dating strategy. Shrigmamel has shown me that he was the 4x4, the off-road edition of the PUA, of the pickup artist. He's willing to go onto uncharted territory. He's willing to try new methods. He's willing to log his successes and failures. That is the kind of guy I want on Mars to catch whatever pussy is available there. Thank you.